I'm Ann Holiday, along with Bob Harris on The Gardening Show. Bob, welcome. You have been talking about vegetable gardens because there are a lot of people who have never done vegetable gardens before.
Yeah, and it's great that they're going to give it a try this year. And I've said in the last couple weeks there, you know, don't be afraid to fail. All of us fail from time to time, but you'll have successes too. So today I wanted to talk about some of the popular vegetable plants and how to pick them out and how to plant them, knowing that you already have located your vegetable garden in a well-drained spot, full sun, as much sun as you can possibly get, at least 4 to 6 hours, at least. So when you go to pick out your vegetable plants, there should be a label or a sign of some sort there that'll explain, you know, how big it gets, when it fruits, how long before it fruits. All that information is real important, and you should keep it in mind. So I'll talk about the most popular vegetable plant first, and that's the tomato. There are two different types of tomatoes. You don't really have to know this, but it's a good idea if you do. There's determinate and indeterminate, and the determinate one means that it already is determined how long it will grow. So it'll grow for a period of time, let's say 75 days, produce fruit, ripen, and it's done. And then the indeterminate ones, and the determinate ones, let me back up, determinate ones are going to be mostly the bigger tomatoes, like the beefsteaks and the slicing tomatoes, all those. Now, the indeterminate ones, they have, I got a little runny nose this morning.
I actually like indeterminate ones because I like to be surprised.
Oh, me too. They're going to be mostly the cherry type. Most of those, all of those that I know of are indeterminate. That means they'll grow forever, weather permitting, and keep producing, weather permitting. So that's the two different types, that you, most gardeners need to know. So when you're picking it out, if you want the indeterminate ones, the ones that just keep growing and producing all summer long, right into the fall. I've even been able to have tomatoes ripening yet even in November, even right here in Bradford. Keep that in mind. If that's what you want, that's what you should look for, the indeterminate type. If you want the determinate ones, the ones that grow, set all their fruit just about at one time, and then ripen all at once, then, of course, then look for those, the determinate type. And again, those are going to be mostly the bigger ones, you know, the beefsteaks and the slicers. Anything that's going to be near a pound and on up is probably going to be a determinate type of tomato.
And that's probably depends on what you're going to use them for, right?
Yeah.
It's mostly for sandwiches or mostly for salads.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We like the cherry tomatoes, the indeterminate ones, better. They produce. Most of those produce very, very heavy, lots and lots of tomatoes. The determinate ones may only produce, you know, 20, 30 tomatoes, and that's it. The indeterminate ones, boy, I hope I'm not confusing people. Like the cherries, you know, you can get hundreds of cherry tomatoes off a plant. A plant that's going to produce hundreds of tomatoes is probably going to need steak, because all those tomatoes, when you start adding them up, that's a lot of weight. So be prepared to stake them or cage them, whatever you prefer. So when they start developing fruit, they don't get so heavy. Or when they get to a certain height, because tomatoes grow fast also, very fast, they'll start to get top heavy and want to bend down. And, of course, that can break a stem or it can touch the ground. You don't want any part of your tomato plant, the leaves or the fruit, to touch the ground. There's a... diseases in our soil everywhere here, and wherever a fruit or a leaf touches the ground, it's going to pick that up. Or it's just open for any kind of little critters that might be in your soil. And we all got them. Chipmunks, slugs, bugs, they're all going to be there. So it's important to stake them up to keep them off the ground. And now that's even more important for the determinate ones, the bigger tomatoes, like the beefsteaks. They can get real heavy. Each tomato can weigh, you know, 2-3 pounds a piece. So that's a lot of weight. And they're going to produce all at once. So that plant can get real top heavy in a hurry. So the sooner you get the stake in, the better off you're going to be too.
Okay.
So that's tomatoes. I don't want to keep delving on just tomatoes.
No, but that's good because a lot of people are doing gardening for the first time. And,
yeah.
And tomatoes are, I think, the most gratifying plants to plant because, I mean, like you said, they grow fast.
Yep.
You get a lot of fruit off them.
Yep.
And you can, they taste so good.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. So one more thing. I guess I got to go back to tomatoes for one more thing. How to plant them. If you look at the stem of a tomato plant, where it comes out of the soil, you'll see lots of little hairs. Those hairs can develop into roots. And the bigger your root system, the more productive your plant is going to be and the more capable it's going to be of finding water for those times that you forget the water. So you can plant your tomato plants. Now, this just going to go for tomato plants a little deeper than what they were grown in the nursery or when you buy them. You can plant them deep. Now, the old rule is you dig a trench and you lay it down in the trench to the point where the first set of leaves are, and you cover that all that up with soil. Now, another way is you can just dig a deeper hole, not too deep, but a deeper hole and set the roots way down in there and start covering up the whole stem. Not where the first set of leaves are. You don't want those leaves touching the ground. Now, eventually, those leaves are going to grow and get a little heavy, and they're going to bend towards the ground. When they do that, I always laugh at myself when I say that, do that. I don't know why I always do that. You want to trim those off. You don't want any leaves touching the ground. So when those first set of leaves start to get big and heavy and start to head towards the ground, trim them off so they can't pick up any disease in the soil.
Okay.
That's real important. Keep everything off the soil with your tomato plant.
Okay. And before Bob goes on, if you have a question for Bob about tomatoes or anything else, you can give us a call at 368-9372. That's 368-WESB. You can send an email at garden@WESB.com. And you can even send a picture that way, which is really cool because it gives Bob more of an idea of what your problem is. Or you can go to Facebook, the B107.5 Facebook page where we are live. And Terry has a question right now. She says about tomatoes. She was shown by her grandparents a long time ago that when tomato plants start putting out long stems with no fruits on them, that you start trimming them down. It's supposed to help the leaves with tomatoes get more help growing.
That's true. And it's a little early for me to talk about that, but I will touch on it a little bit. Yeah, they're called suckers. I don't want to give you too much information at once because I know it's a lot of new gardeners, beginners. So I'm going to get into that in a few shows from now.
Okay.
About pruning. And pruning is going to be pretty doggone important with your tomato plant because, again, they just grow like crazy. They'll grow so much that if you let it go, all they'll produce is a great big plant full of leaves. And you don't want all of that. You want to kind of slow that up by pruning a little bit, the suckers, so that the fruits that do come out will develop and then ripen.
Okay.
But I'll get into that a little later. But yes, okay. Your grandpa was right. Okay. You got to do some pruning.
All righty. Thanks, Terry. And now let's go to the phones. Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
Hi, Ann. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Does Bob know how to spell intermediate, immediate, and all that, terminating?
Indeterminate,
hey, Bob,
and determinate?
This is a Plumeria guy. Question. What would you use for the soil and so forth? What I did, I have one I received about 3-4 weeks ago. I put a layer about 2 inches deep at the bottom of the pot. Then I got some topsoil, and I mixed sand with it, and not too much sand. And then I planted. And, of course, plumeria, you have to have good drainage. Well, that did that. Really drains it. Now, I have another one on a way. Should be receiving shortly. I wonder, should I mix some topsoil with perlite or vermiculite in the bottom and then put the plant in and then just fill up, you know, with potting soil? So what would you think? What would you do?
I would use the perlite, not sand. Perlite was made for drainage purposes.
Okay.
But I wouldn't put a layer of it on the bottom. I would mix it totally in the soil, so it's all through the soil.
Oh, okay, the whole pot now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when you put something in the bottom of the pot, like perlite, gravel, or anything like that. It's really of no use to the plant. I know a lot of people think it's for drainage, and that's what, even my grandma did that, old pot shards and gravel. If you mix the whole soil mix, if it has good drainage, you don't need that bottom layer of gravel or sand or perlite.
Okay.
And then you've given your plant a bigger volume of soil, which that means it can make a bigger root system, which that's what it's all about. The bigger the root system, the better. So I would mix plenty of perlite in with your potting soil and then use that mix totally throughout the whole pot.
Now, how much should I mix with the potting soil? Should I put more vermiculite in it or what?
Perlite. No, not vermiculite. Vermiculite holds water. Perlite drains water.
Okay, perlite. Okay. All right, so just mix it all up and then that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. And now it's up to the plant, you know, with like a cactus, I would do half and half. With plumeria, probably a third perlite with your soil mixture.
A third. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, do they have any around here? I used to get this stuff from Mini Nursery.
Yeah, you should be able to.
I wonder if Graham's have it or Pleasant Valley.
Or even Worth W. Smith.
Oh, okay. I forgot about them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they'll have nice small little bags for you. So
yeah. Okay. I'll go from there.
Okay.
And if it doesn't bloom, I'm coming after you.
Uh-oh.
Hey, thanks a lot. Have a nice day.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. And if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or you can go to Facebook Live and ask us a question there. And I just want to mention that Worth W. Smith has just about everything.
Yeah, so. They do. Yep.
Okay, and Ed has a question on Facebook. He wants to know if you can use campfire ashes for fertilization.
Yes, you can, but be careful, because campfire ashes or even burning barrel ashes have a lot of calcium in it, so it's like lime. It can change the pH of your soil. So just a little bit, a sprinkling over the surface is all you want to use.
Okay.
And it's good. Good for your soil. It's highly recommended, as a matter of fact, because not only does it have calcium in it, it has lots of phosphorus and all other kind of nutrients that are very good for our plants.
Okay. Great question. I don't think we've ever gotten that one before. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Daffodils. We have a group of daffodils that have been in the ground for a number of years, and they grow abundantly. But we don't receive many flowers.
Okay. Yeah. And that the reason being is after so many years, all those daffodils grown in that group are still trying to feed off that one section of soil. So they've depleted all the nutrients in there. So it makes it very difficult for them to create a flower. So once every, 5 or 10 years, You have to dig your daffodils up, replenish the soil, and replant them and moving them a little further apart so that when their roots do come out, they'll have some good nutrients around their roots to give them a chance to develop that flower. So that's common. When daffodils do get overcrowded, they stop flowering.
Okay. Well, good to know. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for calling. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. And Terry says thanks for the advice. And she says that she has always done the pruning, but then people ask her why she's doing it because the plants look horrible when she's doing it. But she keeps doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And they do look horrible. You know, a tomato plant isn't meant to look pretty. but a good, hearty pruning can be very, very important. And again, I'll get into that in another show because it is kind of long drawn out, the reasons why. It's easy to do, but it's a kind of long drawn out. And I'll have to bring a tomato plant in so I can show you because it's hard to explain what is a sucker and what is not. And why should I remove that sucker but not remove this other sucker?
And Terry actually brings up a good point when she's talking about, because she talked about her grandparents. Grandparents, they you talk about this a lot, that it's better to get local advice.
Yeah.
Grandparents are the best advice, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so important, that local advice. I know there's a lot of advice on the internet and books and TV and all that. But we do have our own conditions here that aren't exactly like some of the conditions where other people are growing it. And so we have to do things a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Now, if you copy someone else's, like from, let's say, Philadelphia, that's okay. You know, you'll still be successful. But if you learn how to do Bradford gardening, because we do have our own types of soil, our own types of weather here. We even have our own types of plants that do well here. They may grow a different type of tomato plant down there than we grow up here. That if you do learn the Bradford way, you will be a little more successful. And that's what we always strive for.
Okay. Connie also has a question. She says, do you do hydroponic growing and what do you think of it?
I like hydroponic growing. I don't do any of it. I'm an old fashioned guy. I like to put plants in soil, and grow them that way. But, I do like hydroponic, growing. And, I'm kind of really tickled about this and proud of the guy, Ben Grice, that grows the hydroponic lettuce.
It tastes so good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But he knows the secret. He's been doing it for so long. You know, it's a difficult process to do, and you really almost got to be a chemist to be able to mix the fertilizers and regulate your water temperatures and minerals and so on and pH to really be successful at it. Now he's good at that, so he grows an excellent crop of lettuce with hydroponics. So yep, I have nothing against it. I think it's terrific, but it's not for me.
I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Connie, for asking that question. And I know this person from Southern Illinois. Hi, Steph.
Oh, Steph.
And she got a tomato plant for Mother's Day. At least she wanted one.
Oh, so good.
She's probably very interested in this show. Okay, and if you have a question for Bob, you can send us an email at garden@wesb.com. You can even send a picture, or you can call us at 368-9372-368-WESB. Or you can go to Facebook Live. That's B107.5. And we're right there. You can ask any question you want there. You don't even have to talk to us. Okay. So, Bob, back to vegetable gardens is what we were talking about.
I talked about the tomato plant and that you should plant it a little deeper than it was in a pot. All the other vegetables, you don't want to do that. So now I'm going to go on to squash. That's one of my favorite to grow. Squash are so doggone productive. You can get a lot of food from one plant there. But they do like dry conditions. So it's pretty important to plant them on mounds. Now, it doesn't have to be real tall mound. I like a 6 or 8 inch high mound. The reason behind a mound is because it's going to drain a little bit better. And squash plants don't like to be in wet soil. They call it wet feet, where the roots are always in wet soil.
Oh.
So a mound can be very important to them. So when you're planting your squash, try to form a little bit of a mound and then plant the squash seeds or plants, either one, right on top of the soil. Pepper plants, they're real popular. Pepper plants, you just kind of put them in the ground the same way they came in the pot. I don't recommend planting pepper seeds because it takes a long time and very warm soil for a pepper to grow from a seed. And it's very difficult to do here in Bradford. So you're much better off buying a plant.
Are like red, green, yellow, are all those peppers all the same when you're planting them?
Yes, all the same.
Okay.
Yep, it doesn't matter. And I know some people will say that don't plant your hot peppers next to your sweet peppers because it'll make your sweet peppers hot. That does not happen.
Okay.
Now, that's just imagination. That will happen only if you collect the seed from the fruit this year and plant it next year. Then the genes may be in it, but not the first season. It won't happen.
Oh, you could make a whole new plant and become famous.
And I know a lot. There's going to be some people out there, because I've talked to some, that are going to disagree with me and say, no. I had sweet bell peppers and I had cayenne peppers beside it, and the sweet bell peppers were hot. Said that's just against nature. It just should not happen. I think it's just an imagination.
Okay. All right.
But so peppers come in the bells and the bananas and the hot, all kinds of hots. The hot peppers are pretty interesting. If you like the heat from them, that they finally discovered why a hot pepper is hot, because it grows in Central America where it rains quite often. So there's lots of funguses and diseases. And they finally found out that heat fights off the funguses.
Wow.
So that's how that plant developed the heat in it.
That is really interesting. I didn't know that.
And a lot of people will tell you it can help you too. If you can develop a liking for hot peppers, you probably have less colds.
I've actually heard that. I know a lot of people actually mix cayenne pepper with water and drink it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could never do that.
For the same reason the plant does it.
Okay. If you have a question for Bob about anything we've been talking about or anything else on your mind, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com or go to the B107.5 Facebook page. We are there live. You can ask a question there. So, Bob, back to gardening.
Okay.
Vegetable gardens.
Yep. I got a lot to talk about yet, but I'm going to have to save some for next week, I guess. So another one real popular here in Bradford is zucchini.
Ah, yes.
And it's a great squash to grow because it produces like crazy. Now, on the zucchini plant, there's male flowers and female flowers. Only the female flower can produce the fruit there. And the first few flowers out will be all female with no male. The other way around. They'll be all male flowers. There'll be no female flowers. So don't get discouraged if you see your zucchini plant flowering but not producing fruit. After it's produced maybe five male flowers, all of a sudden it will start producing female flowers. You can tell that there'll be a little swollen area at the end of the flower where it hits the stem. That's the female flower. And then that will start to develop into fruit. Now, if it was pollinated, this is so important. It will develop fruit even if it wasn't pollinated, but once the fruit gets about 6 inches long, it'll all of a sudden rot off because it wasn't pollinated by a bee. So that leads me to the point how important it is to plant nowadays a flowering plant in your vegetable garden to attract the pollinators. And one of my favorite pollinating plants is the petunia.
Mm.
Because it blooms from now right up through even the first frost. So it's guaranteed to bring in some bees. And another good point I always liked about petunias is they cover such a big space. You can buy one petunia plant, and eventually it can cover a 3-foot square area. If you did marigolds, you'd have to plant 6 of them to get that same effect. But the petunia can cover that big of an area and produce hundreds and hundreds of flowers, enough to attract enough bees to your garden to pollinate your zucchini plant so that you do get fully pollinated zucchinis.
Everybody plant petunias so we have more bees.
Yep. And it doesn't matter what color. It doesn't matter. They'll find it. The petunia plant, the bees don't see color the same way we do. They see an ultraviolet light. And the petunia plant has just, doesn't matter if it's blue, red, white, pink, it doesn't matter. The bees can see that ultraviolet light that's coming off there, and they will be attracted to it immediately. And of course, as they're there, then they'll go over to your zucchini plant and hopefully pollinate that. And then you will get good fruit that will develop and not rot off at the end.
And you get to look at your pretty petunias too.
But another key thing for you is zucchinis produce a lot, just like the tomato plant. They produce a lot. So to the average home, I wouldn't plant 6 zucchini plants because you'll get more zucchinis than you would ever want. Just a couple. Me and my wife were the only ones at home, so one plant produces enough for us. So if you have more, maybe 2 plants. Unless you're going to be making breads or giving them away to your neighbors or the friendship table or something like that, then yeah, go ahead, plant 6 zucchini plants.
Okay.
But remember, you're going to get a lot of vegetables.
And we will be talking about vegetable gardens next week, I am sure. So be sure to join us next Saturday at 8:30 on The Gardening Show with Bob Harris.